All right, today is Sunday, June 12th, 2022, and Baruch Hashem, it's a beautiful day after a very hot Shabbat. Yomo, you got 3 minutes to get your food and get back. It's a terrible feeling. I'm teaching Torah 62 years, and I'm totally dependent upon others. So wait, so I have to repeat again. Today is Sunday, June 12th, 2022. Now, there's a lot I want to talk about, but I'm leaving it, if I'll have time at the end, if not tomorrow. The reason is I'm going to try to finish this topic we're dealing with the mikveh, conservative reform, etc. If I don't finish it today, then we'll pick up again, Chodesh Elul be'ezrat Hashem. I want to dedicate this year in memory of Uri Zohai. I cannot tell you what a great individual he was. And when I came in Aliyah, there was no one more famous in the entertainment world than Uri Zohar. And I still remember it was a very primitive Israeli television, and he had a program. And by the mid-70s, he suddenly started appearing on the program with the kippah. And the country was going crazy here. The anti-religious ruled. A week later, he appears with tzitzit sticking out and people are jumping off the roof. The third week, there always was a semi-nude woman in back of him, a big picture. The third week, the woman is covered up. And then the word went out that Uri Zohar chazah b'tshuvah. I need not tell you Arik Einstein, his good friend, his buddy, wrote a whole song as if Uri Zohar died, that like chazah b'tshuvah is to drop dead. And I have to say, to Uri Zohar's credit, and I've said this before, I say it again, what's amazing is his wife and his teenage children went along with him. You don't see that often. I've seen families break up. I've seen a husband and wife go on to be together, but he can go into his room and smoke and turn the radio on Shabbat. And here, literally, they went along, b'lev v'nefesh. And something he said that I've quoted time and again, and it's just as real today, even more real, unfortunately, than when Uri Zohar said it. He said, I had a wonderful education here in Israel, but the most precious gift that I have, they never taught me. They robbed my heritage. And of course, that's in the secular schools. They have no concept of Torah, no concept of why we're Jews, why we're here, what this land is, what Eretz Yisrael is, what Makom HaMikdash is. And you have to give him endless credit. I'll also add what's beautiful, and it's something that a Hollywood movie could be made out of. Two of his children married children of Arik Einstein. In other words, they're machatanim twice over. A boy married a girl and a girl married a boy, and many grandchildren. And Arik Einstein foolishly never grew up, never uncovered who he is, but his wife Alona, Zichrona Tzadeket Levracha, she became a Tzadeket Yesod Olam. And just endless charity. I start talking about it, I just cry endlessly. The most beautiful story, and I've told it before, I tell it again. When she came in Aliyah from Riga, and I know you're sitting here and listening across the world, what's Riga? You have to understand Riga. I was there in 85. You could still feel the spirit of the sixth Rebbe. That's where he ran away from communism when they repealed the death sentence and expelled him in 26, 27. And he went to Riga, and he was there a number of years. And you could still feel his presence in Riga. And when little Alona went in Aliyah, and Chassid, Lubavitch Chassid said to her, she'd always remember that you're a Jewish daughter. In the 90s, that man came back in the Mes Aliyah. And she went to greet him at the airport. And she said to him, "Do you remember what you said to me?" "I want you to know I did remember. I'm a Jewish daughter. It's overwhelming." And unfortunately, I said this the day of his funeral. What was it, last Thursday? If I recall correctly, last Wednesday. Well, a week ago. It's a very, I said, this moment captures what we're up against in Israel, what we're living, what we're struggling with. On one hand, and by the way, all the weekend papers and all the Alonim say exactly the same thing. So I was the first to say it. I said it the day of the funeral, excuse me. But Habeinaviyim mitnabdim b'signon echad. 5 o'clock in the afternoon in the center of Jerusalem, the gay parade, thousands attending, the city shut down. Could you imagine there'd be a parade of Ochlei Chametz on Pesach, be a parade of Ochlei Chazer on Yom Kippur, a parade, a gay parade. And at the same moment, in the other part of Jerusalem, north, and they were burying thousands of people at the funeral of Uri Zohar. And that literally captures Israel. And I want to say to the people living across the world and not in Israel, I hope you sleep at night, because everyone who comes here is a vote. And when you vote here, you can vote for Torah, for Yiddishkeit, for Israel, for Har HaBayit. And in America, you can't vote. You can't vote. We need you. We need you desperately, and we need you as a person. And we need you for your vote. That's the greatness of Israel. It's a democracy. It's Ben Gurion's biggest mistake. If I had been Ben Gurion, I would have established, in the past there were democracies, even Vada Baratz Aratzat, who could vote, the wealthy people, the Balabatim, who had money, influence. I would have established only people who eat Chazer and Yom Kippur can vote in the Israeli election. But he didn't do that, and it was a bad mistake. And Baruch Hashem, we benefit, but we have to be intelligent. All right, I'd kind of don't again in politics, because there's so much to talk, and more important to learn Torah. Now, coming back to this question, I want to tell you this question haunts us. You're going to see in a minute what why I say it haunts us. I got an email from a Talmud, wonderful Talmud, learned in Lakewood. Now, as a result of picking up Rakefet, he told my children, he met them in Katamon, he and his wife, his son are in Israel, living here, Kanayin Hara. I became a hero with that Shabbos, I think, when he met my wife and son-in-law on this, my daughter and son-in-law on the street in Katamon. I became a hero that day, to them at least. So he sent me an email that maybe Rav Menashe Klein is not that naive, that his whole, remember this whole question, can we let the conservative reform use the mikveh? And they're boasting it's an Orthodox conversion, it's an Orthodox mikveh. And Rav Klein says, I want to make a proposal that everyone should agree. And if you read through the underneath the lines of what he's saying, you can understand he knows Chicago, there are many Rabbanim there. Will they cooperate? Will they work hand in hand? All the Rabbanim, the Elder Rabbanim, the Agudas Rabbanim there, everyone has to agree. Only the Orthodox rabbinate will do the conversions. And that way, let the conservative reform send them and to us, and we will do the conversions. Now, what you have here, Norm, do you recognize this proposal? This is exactly the Neumann plan, the Neumann plan, that shook up Israel in the late 80s. What are we saying here? You're going to have the reformer conservative prepare the people for conversion, and then the Orthodox rabbinate will do the Brit Milah and the mikveh. what you have here is, you will do the form, you will not do the norm. And what do I mean by that? What kind of Kabbalat mitzvah can it be if you're prepared for conversion by an Ochel, Nevelet, and Trefet, and Chametz on Pesach, a Reform rabbi, or by a conservative rabbi who doesn't believe in the divine origins of Torah Shebal Peh, who doesn't believe you need a mechitza, who believes you can drive the shul on Shabbos, who believes you can eat in a treif restaurant as long as you're eating milchiks or fish, Eina ben yomo, stam kli, Eina ben yomo. I don't have to tell you what the conservative rabbinate has written up in the tshuvah of the rabbinical assembly. So what's going on here? Where's the Kabbalah mitzvah? Natan, do you recognize this problem? This is the problem that haunts us. What was the Ne'eman Commission? You can check it out. I believe it was the late 80s. I knew Yaakov Ne'eman. I have to tell you, we're dealing with frum people 100%. Yaakov Ne'eman davened at my minyan at the Kolpo Friday night. He was a frum person 100%. And he was Saha Mishpatim. And this whole question came up, Reform, Conservative, why don't we recognize their conversions? Why can't they do conversions? And they came up with this big plan. It's exactly what I'm telling you, that you'll prepare the converts to convert, and the conversion will don't be a baitin. And in preparing them, you'll have Reform rabbis and conservative rabbis lecture. And I have to tell you, and this you can check out, Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb gave his approval. And I can tell you, Reb Nachum Lamb was a frum Jew, 100%. I can tell you that Reb Aaron Lichtenstein did not come out against it. He didn't. Miklau Hain, Atashemeya Lav, Miklau Lav, Atashemeya Hain. From his silence, you saw he wasn't going to come out against Professor Ne'eman. Reb Heschel Schachter's viewpoint remains a question mark. Rumors had it that he also acquiesced. Rakefet was not happy, but who's interested in what Rakefet thinks? And I'm a little bit kanoi, I have to say it to me. Now, this problem comes up again with Rabbi Melamed. It's exactly what's going on now. Rabbi Melamed says, we will do the form. The form will be 100%. A beitin of the Rabbanim Gedolei Yisrael, Tzaddikim Chassidim, Anshei Maisa. Fine. Brit Milah. Kiddush Gemal. Shlomo, no question. You see with your own eyes, there's a Brit Milah. Tefillah B'mikvah. Do you see with your own eyes the young person, the woman, the man, whatever, they come up wet? Kabbalat mitzvot. This question hangs fire. Very difficult to say it's kasher. Certainly not lachatchila. On the Israeli scene, b'diavad, as I've said time and again, we have to strive for the maximum. If we don't achieve the maximum, b'diavad, it's a kasher geirut. And there I have a lot of Torah, Reb Moshe Feinstein, etc. We'll come to that again, if I hope, later today. But this question haunts us. It hangs fire. If we had teachers like my student, who's involved in Tel Aviv in teaching Rabbi Ariel Constantine, if we had 20 people like him teaching, I'd be very happy. Because I believe if you open Torah to someone, they can't help but be inspired. There's another factor in Israel that perhaps, and Rabbi Melamed has alluded to this, and I understand what he's saying, and I've said it long before it became a course celebre here. See, there's a factor here that works to our advantage, that there's a basic traditional feeling in the country. In other words, if you live in Israel, it's very hard to eat chazer. You have to really be a lowlife to go to a Christian neighborhood and buy chasa. If you live in Israel, most people don't eat chametz on Pesach, despite Bennett's government. If you live in Israel, who doesn't light candles on Hanukkah? If you live in Israel, who doesn't have a Seder? Who didn't hear of Shavuot? There's an underlying tradition that is part of the country, that even Ben-Gurion understood, without this tradition, we will not succeed here. So there is something to be said, b'diavad, that even if it's not a totally from person, but basic elements will be there. That's only in Israel, it's not in Chutz La'aretz. But chas v'chalila, in my opinion, you have a Reform rabbi lecture, a conservative rabbi lecture, takes us back to pluralism and takes us back to what's going on in the Kotel, where I differed so strongly with Rabbi Riskin. What they want at the Kotel, and they say it openly, they want a sign, this way Orthodox, this way Reform, pluralism, pay your nickel and take your choice. And I stand, all right, I'm a Kanoi, I don't know, I don't think I'm a Kanoi, I think this is basic Yiddish kind, but nevertheless, I understand the machloket, we can find solutions, but we cannot compromise on Torah. And I come back to what I've said so many times and what I'm so beautifully quoted in the HaMizrahi article that Shlomo got me involved with. You don't know what happened to me. I'm walking on the street. People are running after my wife, blessing her. We look at them. You brought your husband in Aliyah. If not for you, he wouldn't be here. If not for you, Gris wouldn't be here. This campus wouldn't be here. You wouldn't be sitting here. You'd be over there hitting your head against the wall. You understand? Bless my... Wow. So in that article, they quote me correctly that biggest mistake is to call ourselves Orthodox Jews. What? Me Orthodox? What does that mean? I'm a Jew, period. There's no conservative, there's no reform. There's not seven Ishma. There's Maimon HaSinai. You want to observe? The more you observe, the better you Jew. But please, don't call Boel Bilat Asurot, eating chametz on Pesach, don't call gay parades Judaism. Okay, so that's, I still say that Reb Menashe Klein was a little bit naive. I don't know whether he understood all the inferences of what he's proposing, because the conservative are not going to give up on teaching, preparing. They're not going to send their converts to an Orthodox faith and that's going to tell them the conservative rabbis are a bunch of rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, heinous, ruthless, depraved, degenerate, debauched, repetitions, no goodniks. No, it's a conservative rabbi. Mendaf up getting covered. All right. Covered is one thing. If I meet a conservative rabbi, I'll speak with him. I'll be nice to him. But to tell you that that's Judaism, I will not sign on. Now, the biggest individual who suffered the most, and today I come to the heart of today's shiur, Reb Aaron Soloveitchik. Reb Aaron Soloveitchik, again, it's hard to describe him. You had to know him to appreciate him. The Rav, here were two brothers. The eldest brother was the Rav, the youngest brother was Reb Aaron. Second was Reb Shmuel, and then there were two sisters, Meiselman and Gerba. Shulamit Meiselman and Ann Gerber, Hannah Gerber, and then Reb Aaron, the little Reb Aaron. And I yet knew Reb Aaron when he was clean-shaven, 1951, was yet a kid. I don't think he was married yet, 51. I may have been married already, but I knew him as a youngster. The Rav had a certain aura about him. You were afraid to approach him. It took a long time to realize he's only a mortal and break the ice. And from my generation, when almost no one left, but when we would get together, we would say that I remember talking about this with Aaron Batt. No one knew the Rav better than Aaron Batt. Aaron Batt came from New England. The Rav knew him, knew his father. The Rav trusted him. He was the one who started recording the Rav. The Rav only trusted him that the tapes wouldn't be given out. And both Aaron and I and others, we all said, you know, we should have told Rebbe, Rebbe, we love you. It's Yirat HaKavod, but we love you. But there were, unfortunately, this type of feeling broke down later. It broke down because the Rav went through terrible tragedies and he became a broken mortal. And the students, by the 70s already, the Rav, if you look, if you see the documentary entitled the guy named Rakefet, I spoke with Rakefet. He told me it's the only thing in life he ever did single-handedly. Everyone laughed at him. You don't know what Rakefet went through to bring that documentary in the world, but leave it out now. But finally the documentary came, L'Kavod L'Tiferet, and you'll see Chaim Soloveitchik, Aaron, I think it's not Aaron Adler, Aaron Adler's older brother, help me, Yossi Adler, that, or Aaron, I think it's Yossi Adler. Yossi Adler says, we walk out of class and Chaim says to me, since when did my father, the guy came up with a stupid svara and the Rav, the Nishka, you know, they didn't chop his head off. The Rav should have chopped his head off. But you see, the Rav mellowed. He became an ordinary mortal, unfortunately. If you're with me, you understand me. We knew the Rav when, boy, when you didn't shape up, he chopped your head off. And as Rabbi Lam, as Naomi Lam said in his eulogy for the Rav, he says, the worst thing for a Rebbe to do in the classroom. But he said, it worked with the Rav. In other words, we went out of our way to improve, to be better, to be learned, to think. All right, we were smart kids. We were Barry Lam, I'm mentioning names, you don't know what I'm talking about. Barnett Liebman, Barry Liebman, also one of the Rav's Talmidim. So Barry says, when you look at the picture of your class that you identified everyone, could you imagine the IQs that the Rav was facing? This was the brightest group you could imagine. I mean, I can be Jerry, you're talking geniuses, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Jerry Blitzstein, Jerry Blau, Moshe Yagid, Izzy Rifkin, yeah, you go right down the line. Heshi Shachterin back there, a little frightened kid. And the Rav, wow. Now, this was the Rav. They say the Rav was like his father. They say Rav Moshe was a little bit stuck like that. Rav Aaron, they say, was like his mother. So approachable, so human, so down to earth, so warm, so appreciative. It's a different person altogether on that level. And you got to understand, there are other differences. You got to give credit. The Rav, of course he became the Gadol Hador. Where did he grow up? In Pruzhan. Occasionally, so he had one Seder Rebbe Elyahu Feinstein. Pruzhan or Rav. The whole Feinstein family, with all that that implies. And occasionally he visited Brisk, and he had a Seder of Chaim Briska. No? And then he's exposed to Gedolei Chabad. And then he comes to Berlin and he latches on to Reb Chaim Heller. And his sidekick in Berlin, Reb Menachem Mendel Schneerson, who are we talking about? All right, we came to Rav. Normie, if you were exposed, who were you exposed to? A guy named Rothkopf, Rakefet? Ah, come on. If you were exposed to what the Rav were exposed, you'd be a Gadol Hador today. Reb Baron Soloveitchik, no, Vic will tell you, his bar mitzvah, his father already got to a miracle, with miracles. You don't know what Reb Moshe went through to get that visa, because they had an ingrown toenail operation. I mean, I not only researched it, I heard it from Reb Aaron Soloveitchik himself. He was an anti-Semitic consul in Warsaw, and they wouldn't give him a visa. So he ran to America. Reb Aaron is left in Europe. Who arranged his bar mitzvah? Yitzchak Kutner. I don't know if you Rav Yitzchak. I don't know if he was a rab yet. All right, he had a bar mitzvah. Comes to America, can barely speak English. From the day he comes to America, he goes to MTE, he goes to Yeshiva College. He was in his father's shiv. That was his only exposure. And remember, how much time did his father have for him in America? It's not like the Rav in Europe. His father finished with the rabbinate, came home, sat and learned with the Rav 4, 5, 6 hours. Rav Aaron, self-made gadol. Bucky and all we shine him. I mean, you. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, no? He listed out 3 rabbeim. And I'm not certain that maybe the biggest influence in his life was Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. You can mark that down, Dick. Rav Aaron, with your uncle in Chaim Berlin.
Remember Rav Aaron like this.
Right, Rav Aaron. Ach. So, I want to tell you, on this issue, Rav Aaron suffered terribly. He suffered in addition. You see, Chicago, and I mentioned this last week, and I don't want to repeat myself, but Chicago, the Balabatim ruled beyond Chazakah. And when you come to a Soloveitchik from the Briska family, Rabbanim should rule, not Balabatim. And he had a lot of aggravation in Chicago. It all began when it comes to Chicago. The Mizrahi had a building in an area that went bad. And this, every should look, let me tell you something. There was a Rabbi Predmetsky in the Bronx. He was a Telsha. It's a big Talmud Chacham. It's the, do you know who Yehuda ben Meir is, was? Chaver Knesset Mizrahi, classmate of Arnie Rothkopf, got his bachelor's 59, got a smicha 59. That was his grandfather, Rabbi Hecht. You've heard Rabbi Michael Hecht. Why you? This was his grandfather. Same family. And had a big shul on Washington Avenue. My grandfather davened there. Like most good Jews, my grandfather was a wandering Jew. He had a machlekes here, machlekes there. He davened by Rabbi Tremetsky, then Zeri Yaakov. I write about it in Washington. Then Arthur Avenue, Chreb Chaim Eiser, where his bar mitzvah. There we remained already. We didn't budge, because I was already going to shul there, and my father joined us, etc. So, you have this big, beautiful shul. What are you going to do with it? You know how many shuls in the Bronx became churches? Hashem Yirachem. Rabbi Predmetsky had congressional influence. He already knew the Congress people. He knew the local politicians. He was a force on the local scene. Mark, have you ever driven on the Cross Bronx Expressway from the Washington Bridge all the way out to the other part of the Bronx? Do you know that the Cross Bronx Expressway at a certain point curves, and curves back? Yomo, you know why it curves? Because Rabbi Predmetsky arranged for the Cross Bronx Expressway to knock out his shoe. And he got a fortune of money for the shul. And now there's no shiloh whatsoever. It's not a church. It doesn't exist. It's the government took it over. It's a highway. In Chicago, the Balabatim sold out the old Mizrahi building to some Buddhist temple. Rav Aaron fought and cried, and he got nowhere. Then there was Machloikis in Hebrew Theological College, and they kicked him out. They don't need someone to tell them what to do. This issue, he fought, couldn't win. From Rav Aaron's point of view, worse than that, the right wing in Chicago opposed him and supported the reform and conservative position. Let them use the mikvah. Why do we care? Who believes them when they say Orthodox mikveh, Orthodox conversion? What does it mean? It's double talk. Let them use the mikveh. The Federation paid for it. We didn't have to raise money. Tells gets money from the Federation. Agudat Yisrael gets money from the Federation. What are we rocking the boat for? And he suffered. Now, I want to quote to you from a sefer that's not widely known. Haravaran Yelid Sha'ashu'im. There are two volumes to the sefer. Copyrighted, there's no author listed, but it says copyrighted 2011, Rabbi Yosef Soloveitchik, who lives in the old city of Yerushalayim. So I think I can safely tell you he is the author. What I'm calling from is from what originally appeared on the computer. I don't believe it's there anymore. It was taken down. There were people threatening to sue, etc. I begin quoting from page 333. Similarly, there was a dispute in Chicago about mikvot being used for superior conversions carried out by conservative reform rabbis. Rav Aaron published an article strongly condemning the use of the mikveh for these conversions. Ironically, it was the people in the Telza group in Chicago and in the Aguda of Chicago who spearheaded, promoted, and condoned the decision to allow conservative and reform rabbis to use the new mikveh of the Orthodox Jewish community for reform and conservative conversions. Now, Reb Aaron tells a story here, and this story is critical. If you understand the depth of the punchline, it will change a good deal of your religious thinking. I heard the story maybe the first time 70 years ago. I heard it over the years tens and tens of times. It's a very fascinating story. And Rav Yosef writes it up, and he says, let me tell you a story that my father told me, Reb Aaron told him. And Reb Aaron says, by the way, this manuscript is in English, Yiddish, and Hebrew. It's a fascinating mixture of languages. And Reb Aaron says, my father had an interesting incident at the yeshiva. He's talking about yeshiva, he's talking about the very yeshiva we're sitting in. And Reb Aaron tells the story that a rav came to my father and he asked him about a certain student in the yeshiva. This student was going with his daughter and it was heading towards an engagement. And he says to my father, what do you know about this Talmud? My father prays the Talmud. He is a Ben Torah. He learns. I'm proud of him. And then the Rav asks him, after Reb Aaron says all these words of praise, the Rav asked him, the rabbi asked Reb Moshe, thank you, as a fruma, is he frum? And Reb Moshe turns to the rabbi asking, and he says, frum? Bei uns Jiden ist nicht, there's no frumkeit, es ist nicht a frumkeit. Frumkeit is by a galach. A priest has to be frum. But he says, bei uns Jiden, er darf sein ehrlich, ehrlich. And der Bacher is ehrlich. Okay, now, what does this mean? Ehrlich, Ehrlich, Ehrlich. People are named Ehrlich, by the way. It's a family name, Ehrlich. I have a granddaughter-in-law, a great-granddaughter, Adiyah. It's a play on Adina. You've heard people, Adina. How do you translate Ehrlich? How do you translate Adina? Ehrlich. I don't know if there's an English word. Help me out. We don't have an English word for it. From, and yes, Rabbi Yosef here says that these words don't lend themselves to translation. That, for instance, even in the English of our world, you use the word from all the time. What would you say? From, religious, pious. But Ehrlich, how do you translate that? So you see what Reb Moshe is referring to is, look, you can do the form. It's very easy. A person, Shem Shabbos, you know, Shlomo, did you learn with Reb Yisrael Salanter or not? I learned with Reb Yisrael. Don't forget that, please. I have the only smicha Rav Lessen gave all the decades he was in America. That's a fact from the family. And Reb Lessen is Talmud of the Altim. The Altim already saw Reb Yisrael. And Reb Yisrael, what? Mitzvat anashim melumada. That most people, you know, you grow up religious, you grow up frum, and you observe Shabbat, you observe kind of, but it doesn't envelop your whole personality. Ehrlichkeit. It's something, the whole being is a ben Torah. As I've told you so many times, I have no value in life, even though I should be jumping for joy today. Natan Aaron Shofet, 2 home runs yesterday. You follow? Should be jumping for joy. Yes, a kid, I love basketball, but it's not a value. The only value I have in life is Torah. That's Ehrlichkeit. That's Ehrlichkeit. And you see what Rav Aaron, what hurts him here, is that the very from people in Chicago, the Chicago, tells a crowd, and remember, tells fell apart in Cleveland. We've discussed this many times. This goes into the whole question of the Litvisha world that yeshiva are family owned. Well, if you're not part of the family, you can't be a Rosh Yeshiva. Look at YU. Anyone who has who's Ehrlich and knows how to learn and can teach and inspire can become part of the YU faculty. Nothing tells you got to be related, giftus, rutskin, right or wrong, bloch, Gordon, they're all related. And here you have tells fell apart, but tells became very big in Chicago, very big in Riverdale, and from, yes, but if they can join with Reform Conservative, use the mikveh gesunte heit, say it's an Orthodox mikveh, tell the world it's an Orthodox conversion, se felt se Ehrlichkeit. Ehrlichkeit is missing. And he quotes his father, Rabaran. Rabaran says, too much emphasis on frumkeit and very little emphasis on Ehrlichkeit. And I'll give you another example. I'll give you another example of Reb Aaron and what we're talking about. One of the greatest moments in my life. And it has blessing, it has not so much blessing. But it's Reb Aaron. It catches the Frumkeit Ehrlichkeit theme. Reb Aaron calls me. He's in Israel. And this is when Rabin was ready to give away all of Israel. And the whole tragedy of Gush Katif comes out of this. And Reb Aaron calls me. He wants me to make an appointment for him with the Keri Rebbe. Because the rumor was Agudah was going to allow Rabin and his people to do whatever they want. I say to Reb Aaron, Rebbe, how do I come to the Gera Rebbe? And then Reb Aaron says to me, oh, everyone says you have more influence than anyone else here in Jerusalem on the YU scene. So after a compliment like that, I said, all right, give me a few hours to see what I can do. So I called a Talmud of mine, Jetty Atlas. Jerry Atlas, within a half hour, calls Rabbi Haga, Tatal, I think he reached the rank of brigadier general in the IDF. He was the Vishnu Rebbe's nephew, Hager. I think he lives in Bethel. You can check it out. And then I didn't know the Pushkana Rebbe. I would have called the Pushkana. Hager calls the Gerer Rebbe, and within an hour I get back to Rabarin. This is the time, this is the place, this is the meeting. So I have to tell you, I went with Rabarin. Also Rabbi Reichman went. You can check this out with Rabbi Reichman of the YU faculty. He was here, and he evidently is also close to Rabarin, and he went. And the Gerer Rebbe arranged that they had the back door open, that Rabarin shouldn't have to walk far. Remember, he was in a wheelchair with a walker. It was tragic to see how he walked. And we were, there I am, a little kid from the Bronx, sitting with Rabarin Soloveitchik and the Pnei Menachem, the Gerer Rebbe. And the discussion was very interesting. Rabarin is pleading with the Gerer Rebbe to intercede with the government, and we have to stop the leaving of the land of Israel and retreating and letting the Arabs take over. It'll be a tragedy. And the Gerer Rebbe's attitude, I don't want to repeat entirely because I have great respect for the Pnei Menachem, but boy, on this issue, we were light years apart. And the Gerer Rebbe, and they're quoting Midrashim, etc., throwing back some homiletics at each other. And the Gerer Rebbe says, my tata hat mir gesagt, I better tell to you in English, let me say it in Yiddish first, my tata hat mir gesagt, dass die Zionisten wel mechal je kanne sein, die ganze Medina. That my father told me, he's talking to the Beit Yisrael, that the Zionists, the secular Zionists, Beit Yisrael was basically a Zionist, so I'll say the secular Zionist, will destroy the country. And by the way, he wasn't wrong. We need every vote to see to it that they don't destroy the country, don't give it away. And he said, and the Gerer Rebbe's attitude was, we have to do what we can to keep Torah floating, to keep Ger alive. And this was Rabarin. See, what you're seeing here is Ehrlichkeit versus Frumkeit. This story has a P.S. Right after this, I have a Talmud, Rabbi Flaum. You all heard of Rabbi Tzvi Flaum, I trust. Rabbi Tzvi Flaum was in my very first class that I taught Gemara in YU in 1962. The picture of my bar mitzvah that was reproduced in Hamizrachi from the picture from Washington, that bar mitzvah was made in the catering hall that his father ran in the Bronx. His father was a mohel, a rabbi, a reverend, you understand? The catering hall, that's where Tzvi was raised, and Tzvi becomes rabbi of the White Shul, rabbi there for quite a few years, and a Gera Meshulach comes in to see him. He's raising funds for Sfat Emet, for the Geri Yeshiva. And Rabbi Flaum says to him, how did your Rebbe, how did you go along with Rabin? How did you enable this tragedy? And the Gerer Chassid says, no, the Rebbe hat gesagt, es a gezeide vom Shemayim, aber man kann machen a bissel Geld für die Yeshiva, das darf man machen. It's a gezeide from heaven, but if we can make a little money from the government for supporting them, to support our Yeshiva, we should do it. And Tzvi Flaum lifted up this Gerer Meshulach and threw him out of his office. He gave me a whole description, lifted him up physically and threw him out. And this is Rabarin. This is his personality. He was not open to flexibility and compromise when he considered it Dvar Hashem. And this is Rabarin, where he differentiates between Frumkeit is Bam Galach, but Elichkeit is Bam Yidden. Jews have to be Elich, not Frum. And the article goes on and on with the conservative that the fact that they can boast that it's an Orthodox mikvah, people see this in an official document and they don't know how to differentiate, they don't know how to understand that an Orthodox mikvah does not make you an Orthodox conversion. Now, there's a story told here on page 341. I wonder if anyone listening can fill in the end of the story. But here it's a sad story. I wish David Applebaum were alive. Hashem Yikom Damo. He could fill me in. There was a Talmud of Rabbanan. I'll give you his name. Elchanan Ebert. E-B-E-R-T. Mark, have you ever heard of this name in Chicago? Who is he? What is he today? He's a rabbi. He has a position. Elchanan Ebert. And this Talmud was tremendously loyal to Reb Aaron. And he took a megaphone, he stood outside the mikveh, and when people came, Reform, Conservative, to convert, and he saw the person being converted coming in, on the megaphone he shouted at them, it's not a proper conversion, it will not be recognized. Going to an Orthodox mikveh does not make it an Orthodox conversion. And Reb Aaron says, I told him, don't do it, but he didn't listen to me. And they had him arrested, disturbing the peace. And boy, this poor guy, he was arrested once, he was arrested twice. Rav Yosef produces all the articles from the Yiddish newspapers in Chicago. Palatzei, the police, they threw him out, arrested them, and what this poor kid went through. And I'd like to know, halacha l'maisa, what happened afterwards? Was he put on trial? Did they, you know, disturbing the peace, megaphone, yelling, shouting, but Reb Aaron didn't win. The Federation had the support of Gudat Yisrael, had the support of Telz, and this practice continued, although from what I'm told, it doesn't continue today. Now, I want to show you something that is mind-boggling, and this whole issue with Chicago, with Reb Aaron. And as I said, it hurt Reb Aaron so much, it hurt the family, that Rav Yosef has a whole series, let me see if they pick it up, yeah, it's on the computer, a whole series of cartoons, Hakol Lefi Rov HaMa'aseh, and stories about Reb Aaron, what he went through in Chicago, and professionally done comic strips, the whole story of the bakery, how he came out in favor of a Yashan bakery, not to use Hadash. You all know the Shail of Hadash, Chutz Laretz, and the establishment was against him. Why do we need a new bakery? And they took revenge against a couple that they saw in the old bakery. Something was happening last day of Pesach, Shminish of Pesach, and Goyim were baking. We had this in Newark, New Jersey. You should know the Bourbon Street Bakery, which had Hashgacha. Suddenly they found Yom Acharon and Shminish of Pesach. They found the Goyim were baking already. That's a lot better than what people would do for money. And here, all about Reb Aaron, what goes on with the Hebrew Theological College, and comic strip after comic strip, those that opposed him, very, very professionally done. I asked Reb Yosef, who did these comic strips? And he told me it was done by Balei Tshuva, who were absolute professionals and worked in the industry. Why did they do it in comic strips? Because they felt they have, according to what Rabbi Yosef told me, tens of thousands of people who subscribe to their website, and that the comic strips get, it's not that learned. The average person, beginning with children, teenagers, adults, you look at comic strips, it's like in the newspapers daily, they're cartoons, right? And these cartoons drive home very strong messages. So these comic strips of Rabarin and what went on with the Buddhist temple and what went on in Chicago and what went on in Hebrew Theological College, the comic strips have influence. Okay. That's Rabarin. Yomo? I want to go further. On this issue, I don't know who's listening to this year, I'm not listening, but I just want to mention that very interestingly, right after I quoted Rav Menashe Klein, Harav Eliyahu Birnbaum, who has an ongoing column in the Alon of Shabbaton, it's Shabbaton magazine, it's one of the freebies that are given out Friday morning, and it's a fascinating freebie. Some of I tell you, these Alonim have some very fascinating material. If you want to keep your hand on the pulse of what's going on in Israel, at least in the greater Tzioni Dati world, they're magnificent Alonim that are available every Friday. So, could you believe it? Right after I start discussing Reb Menashe Klein, he has a whole column, Mikveh Patuach L'chol Haba'im B'Sha'arav. A mikveh should be open to everyone who comes into its gates. And the first long tshuva he quotes, it's the whole column basically, three columns right to here, is Reb Menashe Klein. So either two of us hit upon Reb Menashe at the same time, or one is copying from the other. Since my shiurim came first, no one can think I'm copying. All right. Now, more sources dealing with it, and fascinatingly, taking the role that ultimately is the Aguda and tells in Chicago. Igrot Moshe, Yoredeya, Chelik Sheni, this is from 1973, and Tshuva Simen Kuf Chaf Hei. And I have to tell you, it's very moving for me because I was there. What do I mean I was there? This is Tshuva from 1962. 1961, 1962, mark, where was I? Rabbi in LMS. Lower Marion Synagogue, Balakinwood, Pennsylvania. Now, what did you do for a mikveh? At that time, the only mikveh in Philadelphia, which was a city that was totally conquered by the conservative movement at that time, was in South Philadelphia. It was a nightmare to go to the mikveh. It reached the point that women were refusing to go to the mikveh and traveled 3-4 times as much to go to mikveh in Camden, New Jersey. Camden later changes neighborhoods, but at Cherry Hill becomes the place where the good mikveh is. But at that time, at least the mikveh was in a neighborhood you could walk through at night and not be frightened for your life. So finally in Philadelphia, they decided to build a new mikveh. It was dedicated in Logan, which then was a better area than South Philadelphia. Within a few years, you couldn't use the Logan mikveh either. Now, I was there at the dedication of the Logan mikveh. I was Rabbi Lower Merion. That was going to be our mikveh. Today, there's a beautiful mikveh in Lower Merion. But then Lower Merion was small yet. And how many people needed a mikveh? And who was the person, the main Ashkana, the main activist, the Balabas, I remember him like yesterday, Dr. Shimon Askowitz. He was an ophthalmologist. He was in my brother's field. I wonder if my brother knows him. And he was a Yiddish tzaddik. And he's the one who led the drive. I remember he, and then there was Rabbi Burak, who later goes to Toronto. And, oh, what a great moment. We're dedicating a new mikveh in a fairly nice neighborhood, yet Logan. And look into the tshuva. What does he write to Reb Moshe about? The conservatives want to use the mikveh for tefillat gerim. And it's fascinating, not the reform already. In Philadelphia, the reform, they're not going to use a mikveh. But the conservatives want to use a mikveh. Okay? And here's a description of Logan. I couldn't get over it, that they're building this new mikveh so that women don't have to travel far, put in Camden, New Jersey. You know who was the rabbi in Camden? Rabbi Riff, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Naftali Riff. He was a great grandson of the Netziv of Elushin, for whom he was named. He was the rabbi in Camden at that time. A long beard, learned in the Elushin, that certain, oh, when you met Rav Riff, you felt you were meeting history. And they want to build this mikveh. And what do you do if a conservative rabbi wants to take his ger or giyoret there? And we can be certain that Reb Moshe writes that these people are not going to do mitzvah, they're not going to do a proper conversion. And should we let them? And here's Reb Moshe looking, you'll see very important lines. He says, the truth is, I'm not happy even with some of my colleagues, with some of the Orthodox conversions. And we all know that these conversions are purely l'shem isha, to get married. They don't observe everything, but all right, b'di'eved, they are gerim. That Reb Moshe will agree with. And even if they're not totally observant. And he says the conservatives, there's no question that the rabbi himself is not totally observant. So how can we expect the gerim to be taught to do a real Kabbalah mitzvah? And he says, halavai, we could stop them from using the mikveh. But this will cause machloket. And once it causes machloket, it becomes the community is involved and money is involved. And therefore, Moshe says, can't stop them. Let them use it. Don't make a machloket. We're not saying it's a good conversion, but at least allow them to use it. Sounds exactly like the Tell's viewpoint and the Agudah viewpoint years later in Chicago. And then Reb Moshe gives an etza that it sounds a little like the etza of Reb Menashe Klein. He says, maybe we should say to the conservatives, look, we Orthodox rabbis, we all don't do conversion. We only have a Rav Mumka. We have specialists who handle the conversion. And why don't you let our specialist handle the conversion? And that way, at least the form will be done properly. Follow, it's the same concept that later comes along in Israel with the Ne'eman Commission, it was called, Vadat Ne'eman. And Reb Moshe says, even Orthodox rabbis bow to a Rav Mumcha. For instance, I know that in Queens, and I know I told you this, Reb Moshe Feinstein, whenever a conversion came up, Rabbi Salnitzer was the expert. I grew up with him, Tzvi Salnitzer, Heshi Salnitzer, Zichrona Levracha. He was the expert. He taught in Brooklyn. He taught mathematics. I think he taught Dafka mathematics, if I'm not mistaken. But he was the expert. And Reb Moshe sent Reb Moshe, and they said to him, why do you send to Rav Sali? Afen Kemen Samach Zayin. Tzvi's father was a Talmud of Reb Baruch Ben Kamenetz. He was a Rav in the Bronx, Reb Shmuel Salmitzah. And Tzvi was a Rav in Brooklyn, in Queens, and he handled all the conversions for RCA, for Reb Moshe, from that area. I remember I told you, I came into America once, and the OU was waiting for me to come, and they told me a problem with this person. They claimed they're listening to my shiurim, and the lady, I think she was Korean, and very brilliant, and she loves my shiurim, and she wants to convert. What should they do? I said, what should you do? Pick up a phone to Rabbi Salvat. So you had to wait for me to come in to tell you this. And then a few months later, I met him here in Israel. He says to me, Ani, you sent me the easiest case I ever had. Took a few months, they became totally frum. Let me use the word Ehrlich, totally Ehrlich, you follow? And members of a big shul in Manhattan, an Orthodox shul, I think I know what shul, but I don't want to mention, what they call a so-called modern Orthodox shul, but Shem Shabbos, 100%. So this is what Reb Moshe is saying, but Reb Moshe says, to make a machloket, it's not worth it. You see, then there was one eighth said they were Jews occasionally, and I'm aware of this, and in Israel too it plays a role. Sometimes the women don't want men to use the mikveh. They want the mikveh to be built only for women. So occasionally they would say, oh, we can't use the mikveh for conversion, it's only for women. But that's only a teretz if it's a man that you want to convert. If it's a woman, it's nishtay, it's not a good teretz. So you see, Reb Moshe says, when all is said and done, there's no question that Reb Moshe paskened, it's not a achrayit. They want to use it, don't rock the boat. Let them use it. That's one tshuva, Reb Moshe. There's another tshuva. I'm now quoting Choshen Mishpat Chelik Sheni. This is from 1985. This already is at the end of Reb Moshe's life. Published 1985. Chelik Sheni in Choshen Mishpat Tshuva Chaf Dalet. And here the question comes up. It's a money issue, you see. It can come up in Choshen Mishpat. It can come up in Yoredeya. Here it comes up in Choshen Mishpat. And the Balabatam again, the problem is here, he doesn't say what community it is. It's a tshuva from 1977. And it's in a community where they're using the mikveh to do geirut that is not proper, it's conservative, there's no kabbalat mitzvot. But Reb Moshe says, I don't see how you can stop them. There's no lifnei iver here. If they don't use your mikveh, they'll use another mikveh. If they don't use your mikveh, they'll build their own mikveh if they have to. So he says there's no lifnei iver. In addition, it's not the sayayah lidei avera. They're going to do it whether or not you are involved. And Reb Moshe says, let them. And he says, now listen to this. Listen to what I'm going to add in a minute. He says, and in addition, you have another problem. That if you don't let them use your mikveh, they'll go and build another mikveh. And it'll be a conservative mikveh under the conservative rabbinate. Probably won't be kosher. And women will use the mikveh thinking it's kosher and it's a fee of karet. They remain in nida. No, Shlomo, do you think this is possible? Women are going to go who care about mikveh, going to go to a conservative mikveh. What's Reb Moshe talking about here? So I got to tell you, it actually happened. Listen carefully. In Rabbi Volk's class, Rabbi Volk was my last Rebbe before the Rav. Again, there's a lot to talk about, not for now, Rav Volk. If you read through the line, between the lines in Washington, I have a very nice piece there on people who came to America, escaped Hitler, but their personalities were ruined. They suffered. They never got the credence, acceptance in America. They were lost. Rav Volk was one of them. He was a gaon adir. He would have been Tel's a Rosh Yeshiva. In America, all right, he was a great Rebbe, tremendous knowledge, but the Rav overshadowed everybody. Read Washington. Read what I write there. Now, in his shir, I was together with a lot of Talmidim who were 1 or 2 years older than I was, because I was ahead of myself in Limudei Kodesh, and these are one of the people who I was in that shiur with. I think it was 2 years ahead of me, was Rabbi Dr. Harold Neustadter. Anyone from Cleveland will recognize the name. Harold Neustadter went on to be a chaplain, went on to I believe his field was chemistry, a PhD, taught in the university, was active in the community. Today, Baruch Hashem, all his children are living in Israel. He's living in Israel. His wife, Kanain Hara, and he actually lives a block away from me. He davens at my Saturday night. We have Motzoi Shas, at the end of, we have a minyan in our parking lot. And I can tell you, yesterday there must have been 50 people in the parking lot, and the shuls are still filled. And there's another parking lot that emulates us. We were the first, but a block away. So Harold told me something unbelievable. In Cleveland, they had the same machloket. And there, the Tells element was totally opposed to letting the conservatives use the mikveh. So they built their own mikveh. Now, in Cleveland, there were a few women who were part of the conservative movement, you know, the feminine equality. They want aliyot, they want to be counted for minyan. But these women went to mikveh. And when the conservative movement built their mikveh, they used the conservative mikveh, not the real mikveh. And you understand what happened here? Because of the opposition to letting them use it for gerut, these women who naturally or normally would have gone to an Orthodox mikveh went to a mikveh that was not kasher, and they remained b'chalot nidot, and yet they had no idea, chiyuv karet. So with our frumkeit, we fell into terrible, terrible yisurim. All right? So this is Reb Moshe. And Reb Moshe was Mekel. Now what's interesting is with the Chicago incident, which happens in the 80s already, we have no tshuva of Reb Moshe Feinstein. By that time already, he was incapacitated. We're talking way, way, way towards the end of his life. So we have no tshuva of Reb Moshe that I know of, that's been published. But be interesting to know Reb Baron Soloveitchik, Reb Moshe, relatives, cousins. Interesting to know if Reb Baron did consult with Reb Moshe, if Reb Moshe did have any opinion. But from these two tshuvot, it seems clear that Reb Moshe is on the same side of Tells and Aguda in Chicago. Now, one final tshuva. Very interesting. One time, walking to Yeshiva University on Amsterdam Avenue, getting off the bus at Amsterdam and walking the few blocks up to YU, I I think the bus comes in Amsterdam in 180th, and I'm walking up four or five blocks. So right to my left, walking up, there was a shtibble with a big lot around it. Today it's either a parking lot or they built on it. And I see, for the first time in my life that I recall, hundreds of people, black hats, chassidim, because no Litvisha wore a black hat in this is before the modern, as we see from pictures, I have pictures here of a dinner in Torah Masorah dinner, late 40s, and the Gedolei Yisrael are sitting there without their hats on. Today, everyone wears a hat. It's beyond comprehension. I was taught if you put a hat on, it's an insult to your audience because it shows you're in a rush to get out. And I write about in Revel how a YU graduate lost his battle for Stellar against JTS because he didn't take his hat off when he came into the house where they were interviewing him. So I see this crowd. And what's going on? And I'm told that Demritzer Rebbe died. And this was his funeral. And that's when I was introduced to the Stern family. The Stern family, this was an Ungarische family. A number of the children came out Gedolei Yisrael. And those that survived the Holocaust, the brother HaRav Moshe Stern, he was the Demritzer Rav. And he was the one who reached Washington Heights. I would imagine if there's continuity today, it's probably in Borough Park. But he was a big posek. He had a much younger brother, Reb Bezalel Stern. And this Reb Bezalel Stern, too, was a great posek. And very interestingly, he wound up surviving, getting to Yerushalayim, continuing to learn here. Then he goes to Melbourne, Australia, where he's the Rav of the Haredi community. Wherever he goes, he establishes a yeshiva. From Melbourne, he winds up in Vienna, and from Vienna, he returns to Yerushalayim. His years, Bezalel Stern, 1911-1988. Bezel HaChochma is the name of his responsa, and I'm quoting from Chelek He, Siman Chaf Dalet. Chelek He, Siman Chaf Dalet, and I want to thank Yomo for calling up this tshuva, the magic of the computer, and printing it out for me. And here, the trouble is there's no date, but it could very well be that this tshuva was written to Chicago. And remember, by now he has a good insight, reform, conservative, Melbourne, Vienna. He didn't exactly remain in a ghetto. And he says, yes, the whole question, they want to use the mikveh, and they paid for its construction, the Federation. Sounds like Chicago. And some of the people claim that we can't let them use it, better give back the money, and you don't want them to say it was an Orthodox conversion, an Orthodox mikveh. But he says there's a real problem. If you don't let them use the mikveh, they'll build their own mikveh. And tiyehi mechuderet v'chitzon yutah, b'chol minei pe'er v'yofa u'b'chol minei nochiyut. Only a Rav who is an Australian Vienna will understand. I understand it because I was in Las Vegas. You know what he's talking about? Going to mikveh is a traumatic experience. Go online and see women discussing mikveh. I spoke about it in class. Remember that the balanit, how you greet a woman going to mikveh, can determine her whole life, her whole relationship to mikveh. Dafker, a student called me a few days ago. It was the 47th anniversary of when we first met. And he reminded me. I said, you don't have to remind me. I said, I'll tell you. His parents were survivors. They were frightened stiff. He came to Israel. This is all Rehov Abarbanel. I can see it like yesterday. And they wanted him to come back. It was after the Yom Kippur War. They were shaking. They were shivering. And I said to him, Shragai, you will not go back. You will remain here. 47 years later, he calls me. I completely understand the English. He calls with that man. Did you hear my talk on the 50th anniversary, whether we become Israelis or remain Chatzi Evet, Chatzi Ben Chorin? He became such an Israeli that his English is worse than a Satma who grew up in Kiryat Yoel or Palm Tree City, whatever they call it. That's how bad his English is. But all right, I spoke English, Hebrew to him. He's had a hard life, side. And he called, his sister was the one who wasn't that from traditional life. She said, all right, I'll go to mikveh before I get married. And the mikveh lady in Toronto was so nice, so encouraging, that she was mekabelet al atzma taret mishpacha. Okay? That's what we're talking about. Well, a mikveh, what does it look like? Shem Yirachem, my wife went to the mikveh in South Philly yet. So she would describe to me the goyim sitting outside gambling and making lewd comments to the women walking by. Las Vegas, Chad Bar owns Las Vegas, they built a mikveh. Did you ever see the mikveh in Las Vegas? Oh my gosh, like a movie scene, like the Gemara, Ein Lam, there's nothing lacking, nothing missing. Beautiful. Wow, to go to mikveh and it's like a salon and hairdressers and oh my gosh. Any normal woman would want to jump into the mikveh. So he says, I can't get over it. I mean, this is insight. He says, they'll build a mikveh that will be so beautiful that every woman will say, leave out those Orthodox mikvot. They're part of the past. This conservative mikveh, beautiful, luxury, clean, hygienic. Oh my gosh. Wow. And he says, if that's the case, women who go to mikveh, I'm quoting him, "Tirgom adaba rachmana litzlan li'isha karet." Then another paragraph. This is what I told you. I don't like to answer questions if I don't know the person. You understand? All right, I know how to paskin. I'm not an amaretz. But it's not just not being an amaretz. You have to have a paskin. Psak, you have to have shimushai. When you've studied 100,000 pages of response literature, that's shimush. When you speak in learning, spoken learning with Rav Moshe, with Rav Avadu Yosef, with Rav Yosef Elio Hankin, that's shimush. So, but you got to know who's asking. It's very important in Psak. You know, there are all kinds of differences. Erev Shabbos, Hepsed Meruba, Orchim. Am I right or wrong, Norm? Read, a volume just came out on Rav Chalap, Yaakov Natzvil and Chalap from YU, his grandfather. Rav Yaakov Moshe Chalap. And then you see who Rav Zilin is coming from. Read, see the way he paskin. And at times, women come in with simple shilas on a chicken. He would send them, go ask the woman who sells the chicken. She'll give you the answer. What does that mean? It's very simple. He didn't want to, it was a simple thing, it's kosher. Didn't want to paskin. So if he would paskin, people who are machmir and mahadrin would say, oh, but the rough paskin, it's not mahadrin anymore. When the woman who handled the chickens would say, that's just nishta shayla, it's not a question. Then even they would be machmir mahat. You see, that's what you have to know. Same thing with Yontif Sheni. You have to know who's asking. With Yontif Sheni, I admit I know the topic inside out. But whenever anyone has, I always say to people, do you want a psak or do you want me to justify what you're doing? You understand? It sounds like, I want to observe 2 days. All right, you're a dummy. I mean, I 2 days had it. It's impossible. If I'm driving my car, how can you make Kiddush b'shem the Malchus? How can you daven Musaf? You understand, Anishruchan? It's impossible. The Rav said so beautifully, you can't fold Kedusha into your pocket. In America, there's Kedusha into it. Here, there's not. All right. You want to observe 1 day? I got to know. You want a psak? My psak is always... Second day, no malacha d'oraita. They have to be mechabed the Shulchan Aruch. We're paskening against the Shulchan Aruch. The Chazon Ish went against the Shulchan Aruch. Rav Kook went against the Shulchan Aruch. The Minchat Lasha, the Munkach went against the Shulchan Aruch. All right, a dummy like Rekef, it's going to be a year and a half from the Kola. How can we pasken against the Shulchan Aruch? Spoke with the Rav about it. And from that conversation, it turned into 1 year and a half of top-quality lectures. But you have to know who's asking. So he says, look, I don't really know your community, but from what you've told me, you can't interfere with them. And I'm inclined to agree with those who say, let them use the mikveh. And he uses the expression, shave the Al Ta'aseh Adif. And he says, you know, Machloket here, you're not going to stop them. Shave the Al Ta'aseh Adif. And he quotes the Tzemach Tzedek. You see, he quotes something with a doctor. And he did something wrong. So do you drive him out of the city? Do you tell him off? Or no, you're going to lose the doctor and other people. He can save lives yet. And he calls the Tzemach Tzedek, shave the Al Ta'aseh Adif. And by the way, this just happened in, I think it's Hadassah, with some top doctor there. There was all kinds of monkey business in the department. And they got rid of some of the doctors. The patients demonstrated demanding that this doctor be reinstated. And you know, sometimes you're better off shaving Al Ta'aseh Adif. And this is what he paskins. Now this tshuva is written from Yerushalayim, and he gives a date, 1984. The fact that he gives the date, 1984, that inclines me to believe it's dealing with Chicago. Exactly. That inclines me to believe it's dealing with Chicago. Now, okay, to reiterate, this is not an easy question. And the implications, what I said an hour and a half ago, the implications of the Ne'eman Commission. This haunts us until today, and we're not going to be able to solve the problem black and white. Rabbi Melamed got caught up here in the same machloket, and the truth is, both sides are correct. Again, I take a middle position, but my position may not be possible, because my position is based upon the fact we need good teachers. If we have teachers who could inspire, roll the dice. You follow? Gamble. You can't lose, even if you don't succeed entirely. But this takes us back to the whole question of teaching. You know, in Israel right now, as we speak, there's a strike underway with the teachers. They didn't begin on time today. And there's a lack of teachers. And my wife showed me that Ramaz, how many teaching positions are open that they're sending around emails to graduates, and we have a real problem because Rakefet comes across very strongly and he thanks Bnei Akiva. But I have to say that Bnei Akiva taught me to waive money. I can still remember Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein's sister, Hadassah, later Hadassah Klayman, she should live and be well. She was married to Rabbi Tzvi Klayman, Zechariah Klayman. You know, these are great people I knew in my life. And I remember a lecture on how good it is not to worry about money, on the greatness of kibbutz. I mean, I remember her telling us how her parents once a month, Rabbi Aaron's parents, Hadassah's parents, there was a third, there was another daughter, older, Shoshana, I think, I forgot her name. I didn't really know her, but I knew Reb Aaron intimately, and I knew Hadassah very well. And how once a month they would sit and figure out their money, their income, what they can spend, their budget. And how in Kibbutz Adapi, you never have to do that. Each according to his ability, and each according to his needs. You almost shut your ears off, because that's pure communist ideology that I just told you. But and it didn't work there, but it worked in Kibbutz Adate. It was the only set of kibbutzim who were in the black, who were stable financially. So you understand this ability to wave and say and do and go and teach. But today, who wants to teach? High tech. There's no liberal arts anymore. Bar Ilan is offering a fortune to you if you want to study Talmud and study these type of liberal arts that Judaism needs so badly. Who wants to teach? Then it's a problem. And without teachers, we have no tomorrow. The whole Torah Sheba'al Peh is based upon continuity, based upon Talmud to Rebbe, Rebbe to Talmud, Talmud to Rebbe. The oral tradition, our living Judaism, Torah Chaim, Torah Emet, alive, kicking, breathing, and you need a Rebbe, you need a living example. It's a real problem. So it could be my solution is, I don't know, may not be viable. When I saw Rabbi Constantine in teaching, Martha and I, my wife is a very good judge of Torah, she has total commitment, and she knows how to judge, and she, this is the real McCoy. We walked away inspired. He had his father speak, who was a survivor. God was in the room with us. It was real. But you have to be able, okay, but look, this is part of life, the dialectical tension. When we're, you know, this comes back to a question I've often raised, I discussed with Rabbi Aaron, and we, as a kid, I knew the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch by heart. I admit I knew Kitzur by heart and Pirkei Avot by heart. And still today, I still know them fairly well. Is it good to teach Kitzur Shulchan Aruch? Because look, the Kitzur is one way. He's generally machmir. Well, no, you know, open up a kid's mind. What we were speaking about before, we shine him. Open up a kid's mind. Shulchan Aruch, Ramah, like Joseph, Turim, Rush, Rif, go back. Shitat, viewpoints. How do you paskin? By the way, the Shulchan Aruch paskin always, he said, he would paskin doing a survey. The Rush, the Rif, and the Rambam. Two out of three, that's the way he would paskin. It's 98% correct. Sometimes he digresses. But maybe we got to teach a kid, look, multifaceted. Here, they have different viewpoints. But then you come back, a kid, is that good for a kid? A kid, you got to give instruction, you got to tell, you got to fence them in, you got to let them know, Ad Kan, here, fence, good, not good. I don't know if there's a black and white answer. You know, and it also depends upon the kid. I'm sure Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, you know, as a kid already, was an Adam Gadol. You got to understand, who's like Rabbi Aaron? Maybe you need to be fenced in. But then you grow a little older, and you start to see, wow, machleket here, machleket there, how do we paskin, how do we... And then comes the hashkafa. Isn't it much better today to be open-minded and say, look, I boast, I have talmidim who are chassidim 100%. I have talmidim who are letvakim 100%. I have talmidim who are YU people 100%. Choice. What do I write in Washington? I go into a little hashkafa there that Torah is like a mirror. The frame is halacha. You can't break the frame. But the picture you paint is individualistic. Each one is his own, different. I don't know. I think that's beautiful. But this problem, it haunts us because it's not going to go away. The reformer here, the conservative here, then the orthodox, and you have from liberal to right wing. You have in the Mizrahi alone today what they call dati light all the way to chadali, chadreidim, datiyim, lumiyim. You follow? It's not going to go away. Okay. And I can tell you, you have to have a little bit seichel here. I'll elaborate one step further. Forgive me, let me go another 2 minutes. But something came up. I didn't even know about this. But when I read about it in the Yalo Nim, oh boy, was I ready to shoot them. Do you know there was a whole debate in the Mizrahi circles of Rabbanim, what time do you start your preparation for Yontif after Shabbat? And you see, there's a real problem for the housewife. For me, it's not a problem. My age, I can barely eat what I, maybe half of what I used to eat. I should be very skinny. I'm not, but you get older, you can't eat so much. So Saturday night, who could eat? I said, Ribbono shel Olam, let me be able to make kiddush and challah. And I think I had a drop of fish and maybe a fruit. But people, my daughters have to cook, my granddaughters, their family, kids, eat, young, they can yet Saturday night have cheese, wash their mouths out, have bread, and then start on meat. Vasa v'yayin, I don't have to tell you the whole question, how do you eat on Shavuot? For me, there's no question, I eat milk, cheesecake. And I in horror, even at my daughter, I didn't become fleishik on Yontif. I had fish by Yontif day, fish. But people have to make milk. How can you wait till 8:30 till the men come home from shul and say, Yontif Shabbos is over? Or Shitat Rabbeinu Tam. I have one family that keeps Rabbeinu Tam. Wow. So there was a whole pilpul. Rabbis got together and discussing maybe they should be allowed to do preparation from the first star, not have to wait to the third star. You follow? And the first star in preparation, there's no malacha to the writer yet, but just taking out the food, letting it there, that. Ribbono shel Olam, you're going to start in with one star, two stars, three stars. You're going to drive the people crazy. Who are you talking to? Hamona Am, and what are we being? All my life I was taught, Motzei Shabbos, you have to wait till Shabbat is over, the regular time, and then you start getting ready for Yontif. All right, older people can eat later. I was telling Malka, do you remember before Corona, every Shavuos we'd be invited out to a friend's home, once a year she made a big dinner. We didn't get done till 11:30 at night. Oh boy, I was willing to make an early Shavuot minyan if I could get 10 old geezers like myself. Chumra, Sheva Shabbat, please, that's for healthy younger people, not for older people. Samachan Rav Avadya Yosef, I know that should. But I couldn't get 10 old geezers together, you follow that? Shavuot night, be a lamdin and understand. All right then. Lamdanim live in a certain atmosphere, but to deal with the Hamona Am, you got to think twice. So anyway, this is a very fascinating tshuva. And with this, I end off Menashe Klein for this term. Have a lot more to go, and I have to tell you, the best is yet to come. We're going to come to man, dealt with every shaila, and you get involved with the whole world. It's Baruch Hashem. But we'll have to leave that until... One second. We have to leave that until next term, Be'ezrat Hashem. Now, everyone will be notified. And if Hank Bauer will help me in the outfield and plead with a few guys in the kollel, he came to Israel, I'd like to have a few sitting in front of me. I don't know what's happening. The program has not attracted a whole great deal for next year. I don't even want, I'm ashamed to go public with the number, but it's talking about the YU innovative program. It's attractive so far, 12 people, 8 women and 4 men. Shlomo, if it'll help you any, where you are, what you're doing, you're invited to put this class, that it's there, available, they can get credit, work it out, let them be exposed to something special that only Israel, only Gurus, only Yerushalayim has to offer. Now tomorrow, I wouldn't miss the ship anything, but tomorrow I'm going to spend the first part responding as people ask me questions, etc. So there'll be an interesting introduction tomorrow dealing with issues that have come up in class and what it's inspired. Any questions? Yomo, what's troubling you? The kollel started with 4. No, so what's number 12? Nothing, but I'll tell you what's wrong. If it would all be men, it's one thing. So now there's a problem, what do you do with the women? And they don't want to have unmarried women dancing around the campus. Torah Schrager is here, the age difference between the men and the women will be a year or two. All our enemies will say, why, it was a bunch of Eishvabs, they're not frum, they're not elef, they're not anything. They have men and women together.
It's all going to be separate.
So they're going to try, Mark, I'll sell you the Brooklyn Bridge and ask for change. They're going to try to make it separate. What does make it separate mean? The women will be housed in the Rub's apartment. They're redoing that little building. They're going to have a separate entrance. But the women have to walk the Choreb where their morning classes are. Or class.
It'll be outside.
Yeah, Mark, what I have seen outside, I'm not going to repeat for the world to hear. Privately, I will tell you. But you don't have to frighten me. For my money, I'll teach, I'll make a separate Afroyensangaich and a men. We'll have men here and women here. It's postgraduate here. On that level already, we can have separate seating.
Yeah. CC Chicago prison, they had a women's floor. Everything was separate.
And everything, that's in prison, but Chas v'Chalilah here we... Listen, Natan, I don't want it to be separate. Maybe Natan will look outside one day and there'll be a young lady walking by. Natan, I'm the greatest believer in romance, in love, commitment. Commitment. Baruch Hashem. I don't want to say an extra word, but God. I married the right girl. When they run after Malka on the street and say, thank you for bringing your husband here. Why? But Shlomo, this really happened. By the way, there's two mistakes in the article. And one is, everyone knows that they had my bar mitzvah in 1983. If that song is old as my grandchildren. But that's a minor. The other mistake, I got a letter. The editor got it too. I got a letter from someone from the Bronx, Sherwin Pomeranz, that I made a mistake. 700,000 Jews in the Bronx, not New York. You said over 2 million. I said in the Bronx, but the person who wrote it out is evidently not a New Yorker, and she got confused. She thinks the Bronx is New York City. So I told them, don't correct me. Correct the person who edited. But the article was very good. It captured me. I really had nachat reading it. It captured me as I really am, with all my straightness and my mishigash together. Baruch Hashem. Okay, until we meet again in health and happiness, das verdammt.
Rabbi.
Yeah, now go ahead, open it.
Yeah, Rabbi, you mentioned Adina before. The only Adina I can think of in Tanakh.
Yeah.
Oh,
what happened to you?
Well, I don't think we, yes.
Well, one second.
Should be okay.
Mark, we lost you. This mutton, good until it's
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Rabbi, just one thing. What you said right before the end, I looked up Herman Ruke, and this is my God. He puts things so beautifully. He wrote about Shavuot. He was writing about eating locusts. He says, I know a Talmud Chacham, a big tzaddik, who has a little bit of, you know, cheese, and then he cleans his mouth out and he has meat. He says, if I was as frum as him in every other aspect, then I would be that frum as him too. I don't even know if I'd be fine.
Herman Ruke wrote that.
This guy doesn't eat meat the whole year round. He only eats it like that. If he can do that, he'll do that. I eat meat the whole year round. I'll eat challah. I'll eat pokey for one day.
No. You should know that there's a whole literature on what to do on Shavuos. Lo pashut, you know. There is milk, meat together. Milk alone at one meal, and then you have those that Shavuos is milchiks. Like in the midbar.
Yeah, I never saw it. Actually, it was Yisrael Hayom. They had like a little thing about Shavuot, so they quoted around saying that the whole source is because it says Dvash B'Chalav is Torah.
Right.
Shavuot is Torah. So the part of the story. I never heard that explanation before.
Is Rosh Tevot Mechalav. In addition to other reasons. How do you get the
Simchat
without
Basar?
You rely on the
Ayin? No. Simchat Basar, if someone, Dafka, feels Simcha only through Basar, then he has to eat Basar. But it's brought down La Halacha. If someone doesn't enjoy meat, he can rely on the food he does enjoy. It's more than Yayin. I mean, a good piece of cheesecake, certainly it brings me Simcha. But I wouldn't say he relies only on the Yayins, the whole Suda. I can tell you something else. My grandchildren went to pick cherries in Gush Etzion. And they pick and you pay to go in and then they weigh the cherries. And they brought me a bag of cherries. I never tasted anything so good. Wow, these cherries made the amount. And we never saw cherries in Israel. I'll tell you something. The picture they picked of me, right, I told you at the start of the year, in the Jewish Action, was in basic training. So when I fought in Lebanon, I have a war ribbon from 82, we reached Lebanon, it was a whole new area, and there are endless cherries all over. And the soldiers, the Israelis, are jumping on the cherries like wild. Motzei Shalom Rav. They never saw them before. So I told them, don't overeat, because it can lead to shilshul. Some listened, some didn't. Those who overate were shilshul. But we never dreamt that there'll be cherries in Israel. Today, I can't believe what these kids gave their great grandparents a gift. Then I don't know, it doesn't have Kedushat Shvi, it doesn't, so I'm treating the cherries. You know, I don't know, there was no indication. So I'm treating the cherries as Kedushat Shvi. I have a, you know, you have to bag and keep it separate, wrap it up, and a day or two from now I'll put it into the garbage. But wow, Hashreinu Shezachinu, cherries in Israel. All right, Halavai, they should work out Ben and Jerry's, and if not, we should be Zoch at the Haagen-Dazs again. Of course, I don't have a problem, but those who are Makpin and Chalav Yisrael, they'll have a problem. Ben and Jerry's has the advantage that most of their ice cream is Chalav Yisrael. You have to look at the top, the way it's, the top label colors change. And if it's Chalav Yisrael, it says so, L'mahadrin. And if it's not, it has a different color. What's not Chalav Yisrael is because they're using Afkat Chalav. you can make a very strong case that Avkat Kolov is Cholov Yisrael. You don't have to have Yisrael. It's not Cholov Akum, I should say. Not Stam Cholov. Because it didn't exist at the time of the Gezeira. And therefore, there can be no Gezeira not to use Avkat Cholov. So you can make a very strong case. But anyway, I'm not here to influence the Chassidim. I'm only here to say that Ben and Jerry's, Halavai, they should work it out, L'Kavod L'Tiferet. Let's see what happens.
Well, no different shittos on what constitutes Cholov Yisrael there.
Well,
are there different sources for milk they use here, if it's liquid milk? I don't know.
No, they use regular milk, but with Lamahadrin mean, what Ben and Jerry's use, it's milk that's only from Shomer Shabbos. There was never any Chulul Shabbos involved in milking the cows. And that all the milk entering Jerusalem is Mahadrin milk, because it doesn't pay for them not to start dividing up the milk. So Yerushalayim automatically gets Mahadrin milk. But Ben and Jerry's, from what I understand, all the milk they use is Mahadrin milk. The problem is that some of their products have Avkat Chalav in it. In other words, they put together those fancy flavors, etc. And that's not Mahadrin. But if you want to eat it gesund de heit, you can make a strong case that Avkat Chalav is not part of the Gezeira. But I don't know, Hasidim are not going to accept what I'm saying, but Litvakin, who are Lamdanim, will accept it with a smile. All right, are there any other questions? Let me thank everyone for listening and joining me, and those in front of me and those on screen. And I apologize for going overtime, but tomorrow morning, Be'ezrat Hashem, at 9 o'clock, we pick up with the Satma exactly where we left off. We will not finish the Satma. I need about another half year or more. And then we'll refute the Satma. It's not just the Satma I'm going to refute. I'm going to challenge anyone who's not a religious Zionist. I'm throwing down the gauntlet. If you're not a religious Zionist, you are not a good Jew. Period. But okay, and I challenge anyone to prove me wrong after they hear my sources and my texts, but leave that for the future.
How does Rabbi define religious
Zionism? Religious Zionism means one who loves the state of Israel, thanks to Ribbono Shel Olam that we have a state of Israel. The longer you live in Israel, the greater your kavanah when you say Hallel and Yom Atzma'ut, Yom Yerushalayim, Nisim v'Nifla'at. Accepting the challenges, not like a Chassidic Rebbe just said, I'm told, that the Haredim are going to be the majority of the state of Israel. I hope that doesn't happen. I don't have answers to the questions. And Rakefet says, the happiest day in my life will be when the Haredim take over the state of Israel. And I just had we will have answers to everything, Be'ezrat Hashem. The Gemara in Bracha, Tachnam Heyam Ad Aleph. Im lo neviim heim, b'nei neviim heim. The Gemara in Pesachim, Daf Samech Vav. Am Yisrael, mi kamcha Yisrael, goy echad ba'aretz. We can handle it, the sooner the better. Wow. But okay, many will disagree with me. Zalman Zayn Gesund, it makes life wonderful. And let me end off with one story from life. Or many of my grandchildren call us on Friday to visit us at Shabbat Shalom. I should say most. So I get a call yesterday. My youngest grandson, who's career officer, and
Friday,
get a call, and he's in Yam HaMelech. What are you doing in Yam HaMelech? They said, yeah, my wife and son went up to our parents. One weekend a year, a long weekend, all the officers in the army or in his division have to volunteer to do guard duty. It's like Russia. Sabotka, whatever they called it. When we were in Russia, we were told, what is it, for Saturday or Sunday, they, what's it called in Russian?
Subotka.
All right, I wasn't far off. Subotka. To have to volunteer to work an extra day for the sake of the communist empire. So these poor guys have to, and their mother grandson is, who says the army's a disgrace. You take a captain and you send him down to Yamamela to stand guard duty, disgrace. So my grandson is down there, and his biggest problem are the flies. So I told him, look, I hope what happens to you is what happened to your first cousin. Your first cousin, Golan, was on guard duty in Yam HaMelech with another soldier, heads the boys, and they come off guard duty 9 o'clock in the morning, and they go into the hotel to get a few scraps of food, and a tourist, an American tourist, sees these two young boys in uniform with kippot on their heads, and he sees them with their guns and everything, and he asks them, what are you doing? And they explain, in his broken Hebrew, he answers them, and he says, but you're off now, right? Sit down. Calls over the waiter, says, bring these two soldiers, the best of everything you have, and bill it on me. And these kids feasted that morning on guard duty. So once again I say, Umikam Chayis Yisrael Gayachad Ba'aretz. Thank you once again until we meet in health and happiness. Das Vedanya.